Welcome to the 10-Minute Entrepreneur Podcast, intended to equip and encourage business owners and aspiring entrepreneurs. Taught by active business owner, best-selling author, and teacher, Sean Castrina.
All right, Sean Castrina with the 10-Minute Entrepreneur Podcast, where I bring you founders of companies, lots and lots of founders that share with you what they have learned from starting their companies. And it's the only way you're going to learn. So that's our goal each and every podcast. I have Jordan Levy with me, the founder of CapSource. Jordan, it's great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I can tell. You had me, I was a train wreck for the first 3 minutes of this podcast show people. I didn't have my producer helping me. So, hey, Jordan, I appreciate your patience. But so what CapSource, was this the first company you've ever started? Rarely is it. This will be the one time you tell me it was.
No, it actually wasn't. I've been in the education technology space focused on experiential learning for almost 10 years now. Actually started while I was still a student at Lehigh University, a first company that really kind of showed me a lot about what you could do for students if you expose them to industry while they're still students through projects and through, you know, meaningful mentoring. And so that's really what we aim to do through CapSource is introduce students to industry partners, get them working together, shared goals, and really learning from the mentoring and from the exposure.
So do they physically go somewhere? Is this total virtually? How does this kind of work? Because I absolutely agree with the model in education. I mean, I'm big on apprenticeships, on internships, mentoring. You know, that's definitely the way to do it. So tell me how this works.
Yes. So there's no physical requirements for experiential learning to happen. So when we say experiential learning, we mean industry integrated project-based experiential learning. So that means that they're getting out of the philosophical classroom and working with third-party industry partners. So that's the industry integrated part. The project-based part is actually the students are working on kind of like a live case study. So there's a real challenge, but we help frame it so that, you know, it could be done remotely while the students are enrolled in other classes or are working part-time to get themselves through school. And then when we say experiential learning, we define experiential learning more as the outcomes than the learning experience. So it's actually an experience that you can add to the resume and showcase, you know, on LinkedIn and talk about during interviews. And so that's really the main difference that we provide our education partners is access to these learning opportunities in kind of a turnkey way so that they can provide their students with a meaningful experience. So because the world has moved mostly digital, so have our projects naturally. So it used to be, you know, probably about half and half on site for at least a component of it versus fully virtual. Now we're probably about 90% of our projects are happening completely virtually. Some schools are still teaching in person, and so therefore, you know, they want their industry partners to be available in person, but it's a model that works really well remotely. So we're definitely encouraging that, especially for the safety and well-being of our participants.
Yeah. So what made you come up with this business idea specifically? If you can take me through your kind of your entrepreneurial journey, like what type of company did you start before this? What made you start this one? How do we come to where you have CapSource, a company that's up and running, and how did we get there?
Yeah, I think entrepreneurship is certainly a lifestyle, right? You're kind of, I look at, I actually always say that education is about chasing curiosity and entrepreneurship is about monetizing curiosity.
I like
and
that.
And so I think that chasing curiosity is really fun. It's what makes me excited to learn. It's what makes me excited to solve complex problems and learn from that experience. And so taking that and corralling that to be an entrepreneur is really focusing on doing it in a repeatable way, recruiting a team, training that team, scaling your operation so that you can reach more people and impact more lives. So my whole journey started kind of while I was a student, really felt like I didn't really get a good amount of exposure and experience while a student in Lehigh. I thought the curriculum was great as far as traditional curriculum is concerned, but You know, for my standpoint, you know, I wanted to know, hey, what's it like to work in a startup versus what's it like to work in, you know, medical devices technology versus the healthcare industry versus on a marketing team versus at a, you know, a high growth pre-IPO unicorn. Like, yeah. How do you get those experiences so that you can actually learn what skills you want to use and what skill, you know, what you have to offer, what's actually unique and valuable that you can bring to the table, like without actually getting a chance to do that and deliver that to, you know, to real companies and work hand in hand with real professionals. You know, it's kind of all in this pseudo reality that we created.
I agree. Education is way too much. It's all knowledge based. My model would be to tear it down and start over. I would get rid of general requirements. My son hit me with that. He said, Dad, I'm happy to go to college on one condition. I don't have to take general requirements. I'm going to take nothing but business classes. Because to him, Hitler was bad. I know. He goes, you know, America was started, give or take. You know what I mean? He gave like an overview of what we already know. A plus B equals C. His whole point was, is that none of anything past my high school learning and that none of it is applicable to what I want to do. It's just 2 years of taking, you know, more Shakespeare, you know, cause you got to take literature and all that. And he goes, I want to be immersed in business. And I think that, man, I think, you know, they keep talking about like education debt, cut your general requirements out. Put 2 years of realized learning with 1 year of an internship in between. So you go 1 year to kind of get like an overview of all the different things you can jump in. Then maybe you have 2 semesters of 2 different internships. So you can kind of get a better idea. Then you come back your following year and then they just got to reimagine how they're doing education. Because I think what you're talking about is, you know, the applicable, can you get out and actually do something with what you've learned? And, there's definitely a gap there.
Yeah. I mean that, you know, it's tough to say like these traditional classes, like we've been running education this way for centuries where the person in the front of the room that has all the answers and has access to the resources and it's their responsibility to share it, you know, with students and they're the experts and you have your pupils and, you know, that's the traditional model. And, you know, I think it's so much more fun to learn with people and also like, you know, learn how to co-create something with, you know, with your mentors. And I've always looked at my educators as mentors and less as like, you know, those teachers that have all the right answers. And so I always thought that the most exciting and engaging classes were ones that were interactive, where I could provide something that was outside the scope of the textbook or the classroom context, just because I thought that it was relevant and that it would add to the environment. And so those classes end up being more beneficial for everyone, you know, because other students, you know, can contribute. And so together you have a unique class every single semester. And I think when you add industry partners into the mix, you know, that's even more beneficial because it's not just saying, okay, we're going to take a topic and go bounce different ideas off the wall and come up with, you know, cool concepts and ways of applying this material. It's actually saying, hey, you know, there's a real challenge out there that shows how this material or this concept applies, you know, to real situations. And so you can actually learn how financial modeling solves problems for entrepreneurs, or how operations and project management can actually help create more efficiency for teams, how hiring processes, you know, need to be fine-tuned or culture is built in startups. Like all of these things are, you know, projects that we've kind of, you know, extracted from, you know, organizations, all shapes and sizes and parsed down so that students can actually work on it.
Yeah, no, it's so, I mean, obviously, so who is your client? Like who reaches out to you guys, you know, who reaches out to CapSource, or who do you guys focus on? Cause I've kind of got, you guys definitely, you know, you have an educational model, you assist in the educational process through mentors and through experience. And I love that, but like you have this business idea, CapSource, who is your client? Like, who's your target customer that you were like, okay, we're building the, like, how do you guys make money?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we maintain a 3-sided marketplace. 2 of those stakeholders actually pay us for services and software subscriptions. Our core customer has always been the institution, educational institution that wants to build better relationships and better programming with industry partners. And then more recently, we started to introduce products, services, and software to the industry partners who want to better engage universities and college-age students. So the only ones who aren't really paying us are really the students. Yeah. Mostly because they've already paid the institution and the institution is our partner. So we help them build the programming out for those students. And then the industry partners, there's lots of different, you know, case competitions that we package for them. And, you know, really the whole idea is most industry partners don't really understand how to build internship programs.
That's,
you know,
for the benefit. Say, you're basically creating the perfect, you know, now that I, sometimes it takes me 10 minutes into an interview to kind of figure out the mousetrap and all the components of it. And here I kind of, basically what you do is you're taking the university and saying, listen, you need to supplement your educational, you know, process can be better. You could provide a better education. We could help you with that. We could provide this experiential A, B, C, and D. And then you have all these companies out there that want interns, apprentices, and, you know, they want young college students, bright, smart, that are interested. And you're kind of merging, you know, merging the two and creating that work, that relationship that's truly beneficial to each of the parties.
Yeah, I think one of the cool things that we're doing with some of our academic partners is we're giving them a new business model. We're giving them a way not only to say to their students, hey, we're going to train you and place you into, you know, real professional opportunities so that you can actually get ahead of, you know, your competition when you emerge as working professionals. But you can also charge the companies to work with your students. This has been proven. You know, Carnegie Mellon sometimes charges between $25,000 and $50,000 a year to work with their computer science and data science students. And so, you know, if you can actually build a program that serves your employer partners, those industry partners, often alumni, so well, you know, now alumni and those employer partners are willing to actually take out, you know, money and pay the institution, you know, for that pipeline of talent and for those insights that are guided by, you know, educators and faculty who are experts in the field. So we want to help schools kind of become that innovation center again, because I think that was lost in the mass, you know, production model of education that we've kind of clung to over the last 30 years, trying to provide more access to education. We totally forgot about quality. We totally forgot about the purpose. And the purpose is helping students figure out, you know, what their passions are and how to really chase that dream. And, you know, I think the worst thing that we've done is kind of, you know, put a friggin' weight around their shoulders and say, oh, you know, we're going to throw you into the deep end with, you know, with $100,000 of debt. I mean, that's definitely not the way to help people.
Speeded up the problem is it created their need to survive. It has to be so much faster because they walk out with this debt payment that's getting ready to come, you know, it's the perfect storm where they have to make a certain amount of money. So they look back at the university, you charged me such and such. I got to pay this back. I've got a subpar education, in my opinion, or I can't get the job that I thought I could, or I can't make the pay that I thought it could. Where this what you have really does get the university a little, or whoever it is, a little off the hook, in that they're definitely providing something above and beyond, you know, what has been traditional. Where a university can say, hey, listen, we've got such and such in place. We're placing our students in these you know, additional programs. So I could, you definitely hit the bull side. I mean, I'm hiring right now. I would pay $25,000 in a second. I pay $100,000 this minute to have a pipeline of talent.
Yeah.
In a second. I was just thinking about that. I'm like, it's, you know, I mean, once you come up with the idea, putting the team on the field is the most important thing in any company. So the ability to attract talent, that's why I kind of, you know, again, as you get in the interview, I kind of see where, you know, you're definitely providing value to an institution, a learning institution. There's no doubt that they need this. Then I'm looking on the hiring side of it as a guy who owns companies. I'm like, if I had a university or even a tech somewhere in this area that I could get 6 or 8 interns a year pipeline directly to me, and I could train them the way I think, what I think they should learn and know, and the little intricacies of our, you know, company, our culture, and what we think works, I'd pay for that in 10 seconds.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I've always found mind-boggling is if you look you know, from 1970 to 2020, how many of the Fortune 500 companies are still around? It's like less than 10%. And so the my hypothesis as to why that is because they're not reinventing themselves. And the only way to continuously innovate and reinvent yourself is to stay in direct contact and in direct communication with the next generation. And so you're getting those insights from students. They're the only ones who are kind of in that pre-professional stage where they haven't been doctored or trained or you know, had their any of their suspicions or their hypotheses like gut checked yet. And they're just like, they're free spirits, and they come up with these unbelievable ideas. They know about these resources, and they can really move the needle on, you know, coming up with innovative solutions. And so the problem is most schools don't know how to figure out how to mobilize their students and get them engaged on these types of things.
Funny. And that's really what you hit it on the head. The thing about college age students and down, let's just say 24 down, really specifically, they don't know what they don't know. And that's what makes them absolutely incredible in one area. I always say, you know, that scares me because they don't know what they don't know. But what I love about them is they don't know what they don't know. I'll give you like a perfect example. I hired two college kids on a company that let's just say it's a PR company and a really good PR company, let's say, would get you 4 articles in a week just for conversation's sake. So I bring on these two college students. I don't tell them how to do it. I'd say, this is the outcome I want. And I doubled it. I said, you know, a good company would do 8 of these. I said, I don't care how you do it. Instead of like going into America, they cotton pick and went virtual. They've got people from all over. They came back to me in 6 weeks. They were booking 10 media opportunities a week. Because if I would have told them 4, they'd have did 4. But I doubled it and said 8. They didn't know any better. I gave them 6 weeks, did not tell them how to do it. I said, listen, in a perfect world, this would be the outcome I would like. I don't care how you do it. And they tripped and fell for like, you know, 6 to 8 weeks. And then it's funny, I just had a meeting a little while ago. Well, last week we got 11. I'm like, you know, they don't know what they don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's really a few things that students walk away from these experiences with. One, which is, I think, is the best, kind of tied to that chasing curiosity thing, is actually inquiry, right? Like understanding how to ask questions, what questions are good questions that ultimately inspire more questions, right? Like if you're learning and you're engaged, the real way to measure that is like, I actually have questions, and like the educator who's there embraces those questions and also is not scared to say, I don't know, that's a good question, let's find out together, right? So that's the learning environment aspect that I think is really cool. Another thing that's really cool is most of these experiences are not like traditional internships where, you know, you're an individual, you know, out, you know, completely off the reservation by yourself at an organization that's like whatever is the bottom of the totem pole falls on your desk. Yeah. These are carefully designed, you know, group projects with like the leaders of the organization. And so you're actually thinking at a strategic level and a much broader scope than someone who's just like doing, you know, menial tasks at the bottom.
You're right about that. They typically come in at ground level, and that's that working their way up. And here, but that's not the learning process is the interaction with the decision makers and all that. And, you know, I you're right. The model, I think you guys have something really, really neat. And it's, you know, I love when people figure out a way to monetize, you know, an idea and or solve a problem and monetize it. And that's what you've done. What's the one piece of startup advice? You go back to Lehigh for an alumni function. You're sitting at a dinner and somebody says to you, man, I'm looking to start a business. What's your go-to startup advice for that you've learned?
Yeah. I love this question. So we used to ask the same question to a lot of the entrepreneurs that we were interviewing. So I think the key in bullet point format that I would say is you have to be obsessed with your customer and the problem you're trying to solve. I think that if you are not obsessed with that customer and interacting with that customer, your business can only make it so far because you're going to be, you know, completely wiped out and and aggravated way before the business becomes successful. And so that just ends up being a waste of time. And so, you know, that's been called into question many, many, many times, you know, me working, you know, in the education space. It's not the most, you know, progressive industry. It's not the most innovative industry. It's not the most easy to launch a product and to get adoption. But for me, the perseverance is key, right? You have to keep hustling. You have to keep moving forward and making progress. And that only can happen if you're completely obsessed with the change you're trying to make in the world. I think the other thing, and this is something that I've learned more recently as my team has grown, but you know, building a team in a startup environment, especially a bootstrapped environment, is so challenging because you know you don't really have the resources that other companies do to compensate. So you have to figure out other ways to get your team excited and to get them engaged and working. And obviously, you know, a lot of people are, oh, you could just give people equity. Well, that cannot be the solution for everyone.
Yeah. Right. There's only so much equity.
Right. And you also need to figure out ways to motivate people. And so we actually use an educational culture as our company culture. So the whole idea is, you know, most of us don't know what we're doing, right? I think we're all kind of on a floating rock through outer space, and we happen to be able to live in the 21st century where, you know, thankfully we can connect with each other and collectively make a bigger impact on the world if we all set our mind and vision in a way that's aligned. But, you know, the realistic nature is people want to learn. Like, people actually want to learn, but they want to learn in an experiential way. And so the only way to do that is, you know, we have a student from the University of Illinois who is a junior currently, started last summer, and said, hey, I want to learn about data analytics. Like, I've never done that. And I think it's important for me to know that. And I said, okay, well, how do you want to get started? Like, you tell me what you think is going to be the most impactful for you to learn about how to be, you know, involved in data analytics and comfortable. And she's like, well, I want to build you a KPI dashboard, and I want to work with the marketing team on deciding what key performance metrics we're going to be tracking. And so she basically created her own learning because we gave her an opportunity to do that. And so, you know, not in every case. And of course, you know, when you're dealing with current students, like, you know, they're able to make that choice of foregoing compensation, at least for the time being, to just get that extra learning. But if you create learning opportunities, it's amazing what can happen for talent. And so, you know, figuring out ways to connect with team members, to engage them, to let them have, you know, enough wiggle room and leeway to co-create some value with you, I think that's really something that is challenging, but it's crucial if you're a bootstrap startup founder.
No, I it's funny you mentioned that, because I talk about, I think there's 9 different things that motivate people to come work for you, and money's only one of them. Literally, you've got to, when you're a startup, you're right. I'm always shocked by the level of talent I've brought on over the years. And not one time did I overpay. In other words, not one time could I outpay a competitor.
Right.
You're a startup. And I think of I gave them creative schedules. I gave them, you know, a seat at the table to help make decisions. I gave them influence. I gave them maybe an educational opportunity. I gave them, you know, something with their family life to make it work, to make their family life and working. I mean, everything but money I had to work with. And and you can do that, and you have to think that way. So no, I like that. I think that's critical. I wrote down your monetizing curiosity. That's actually a really good phrase. So tell me something, Jordan. Is this a company you hang on to forever, keep building it, or is it one of them where you get that nice little offer and you walk away?
I mean, honestly,
answer to either.
there is no wrong, right? I mean, everything changes when the opportunity presents itself. And, you know, there's been opportunities where, you know, even big prospective customers have almost positioned an opportunity that would completely change the trajectory of our business. Yeah. You know, like talking about, you know, 6-7 figure deals that would outweigh 90% of the revenue we're getting elsewhere. Yeah. So if that happens, like, what do? Do you change your business model to accommodate these people, or do you stick to your gut that you had something working in the first place? So all of these, you know, that's the only thing that kind of back to your other question about like what advice, like, you have to earn your way. Like, every time you add a zero to a proposal, you earn that because you've closed a deal with one less zero and done it well enough for those people to come back to you and, you know, shout from the tops of the mountains, hey, this vendor is the best. They gave me exactly what they said and more. I got so much value out of it. So, it, you know, it starts with a few $100s. Then you get to a few $1,000s. Then you get to tens of thousands of dollars. And then you get to hundreds of thousands. So you have to earn your way and earn the trust of customers. And you can only do that by actually running through, you know, that process. So the fact of the matter is I love doing what I'm doing. I love like helping to craft the future of education. I think I'll be in this industry for the rest of my career. I do also understand that at some point, in order for this to really make the massive impact that we hope it makes, we're going to need deep partnerships, either with institutions, publishers, online program managers, learning management systems. There's lots of players that we're going to have to play with. And, you know, there might be a better way to work together than individually. So I'm always open to the discussion around that. The fact of the matter is, you know, I don't think any entrepreneur should be building their business for the exit. Although, of course, you know, that's something.
Some do. I can't. To me, that's like going into a relationship knowing you're going to cheat. It's like, how much can you love them? You know what I mean? It's kind of, that's a hard one. I mean, I think we, you know, I always say every business is for sale at the right price at the right given time. Sometimes you get the right price, but it's not the right time.
Right.
Sometimes it's not the right, you know, it's just, you know, somebody makes me, you know, the timing's just not right and the offer's great, but the timing's not right. So, because you definitely have one of those businesses that I see being very attractive.
Yeah, I mean, we're having a lot of fun. We're building some cool technology that really can be white labeled and tailored to the needs of industry partners or schools that are just trying to build that pipeline. And so, you know, a lot of companies don't really have a good way of assessing talent. And like, my whole thing is the same way that we hire, just give them a project to work on that actually matters to you as an organization. It's like a little bit more risky because you're giving something that matters to someone that you don't know or trust yet. But that is the interview process rather than, you know, asking them a whole bunch of questions and calling references. Like, let people prove to you that they can work with your team and that they can provide you with some value. And so I think that's what the kind of environment that we're building for the industry partners. And, you know, frankly, I think the students and the job candidates, I mean, there's a very fine line when you switch from being a student to a candidate, especially in our model, because they're really still students. But, you know, it's amazing. One of our case competitions last year, the company CoinSource, it's a really cool Bitcoin ATM operator based out of Dallas, hired all four winning students as interns and then gave them all full-time offers because they just had such a good experience working with them, having them develop, you know, a go-to-market strategy for their B2B pivot. And so the students understood everything they needed to know about the model, developed value. And then the company was like, all right, well, let's actually go to market. We need your help actually, you know, putting this all into play. And so that's really where this model begins to grow. But, you know, of course, it's different than what either industry or academia is used to. And so we're kind of doing change management through technology, through services, which is really the best way to start a business, in my opinion.
No, this is amazing. Listen, what you need to get out of these interviews that I have is that I interview founders and I know all the businesses are from A to Z, okay, on what we look at. But listen to the interviews. Listen to the key thing is everybody, 9 out of 10 times there's a problem that they identify. Then they have what they believe is a unique solution to it. And then they monetize it. They have the target customer. They kind of merge the two together and boom, you have a business. It really is not rocket science. You know, it's, I'm just fascinated. I've, you know, interviewed, you know, 100 founders in the last, you know, I interview probably 6 founders a week and I'm always fascinated because the key building blocks are all the same. It's just, you know, the solutions are different. The businesses are different, but the basic building blocks are all the same of successful companies. Jordan, I really appreciate you being on the podcast today. You gave some great, great stuff. Just great stuff for my audience to learn from. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. I mean, just to kind of put a cherry on top here, I think what you've suggested is that creating a business is not hard. And I agree. I think, you know, when I was in elementary school, I learned that some families in my hometown, like didn't like have candy or sweet iced tea. Yeah. And so I learned that I could actually take iced tea from my parents' home and sell it to my friends who didn't have it. And so that was a business, right, at the time. It's the resources I had. It's a solution I identified. That's not rocket science, as you say. Yeah. But I think what is rocket science is scaling a business.
Oh,
actually figuring out how to get from 0 to 60, not from 0 to 6, right? Yeah. It's one thing to manage 6 customers, to manage 60, then 600, then 6,000, then 6 million. We're talking about very different ordeals. And so that's really the rocket science, is like building operations, training, hiring.
When I look at like a FedEx. Like
managing cash flow.
I know, I do. You're right. To me, it's, I always say like, getting a profitable company, to me, I can move the pieces around. I kind of understand, but you're so right. Like, I think of certain companies and like my head explodes on how do, like Fred Smith and starting FedEx. You basically had to start an airline, a delivery service, a logistics company, a pack. I mean, you started like, you had to start like 5 massive companies and to have one. It makes my head explode. The level of scale required.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's so many amazing use cases of people that just come up with such amazing novel solutions. And so, you know, for me, the reason why what keeps me so excited to do what we're doing is, yes, I care about student learning. Yes, I care about the future of, you know, educational institutions, but I get to learn, which is my main driver, from every company and industry professional that we connect with our students. And so it's a really cool vantage point that I've created for myself. And that's really what I would leave as parting words for, you know, your listeners, is, you know, find what vantage point you want to see. And, you know, I went hiking this weekend in the complete, it was literally called the Mission Mountains Wilderness in Montana. And I've never been wilderness hiking. I always do like well-marked national parks, usually hiking. And so, you know, there are these moments where, like, first of all, you can't even tell if you're on the trail or not, because there's downed trees everywhere. And you're like climbing from one to the other just to make it to, you know, the part where we were rock scrambling for about an hour and a half up to the top of this peak. And so it kind of made me think about, like, oh my God, like, you wrestle with yourself, you wrestle with the world to get to that vantage point. But know which vantage point you're aiming for, because that's the most important for you to be successful. It is really just satisfying your own curiosity and really persevering and overcoming that adversity. I think that's all part, and it's a very good metaphor for entrepreneurship, is just get out there, be uncertain. We were 5-6 hours hiking away from the closest civilization point, which was really our car, which was another hour and a half from another civilization point that could actually help us if we needed it. And so it was, you know, there's people who do this, you know, for substance abuse training. My brother-in-law used to actually operate out of this wilderness area in Montana, and used to take troubled teens for 20, 30 days at a time. We couldn't even make it 12 hours without really like breaking down. And so it really made me understand, like, you know, a lot of entrepreneurship is understanding the challenge, you know, focusing on the outcome and really remembering that you're doing it all for that vantage point, which was that beautiful peak that we got to see all of Flathead Lake from. And it was just an amazing experience. So earn your vantage point, chase your curiosity, and if you're bold enough, try to monetize it.
I love it. Jordan Levy here he is the founder of CapSource. I want to thank you so much for being on the podcast. How do people connect with you if they have a question or just want to reach out to you? You can say, no, I don't ever want to talk to you again. But do you have a way that people can reach out to you, connect with your company?
That'd be a bad entrepreneur move if you said I'm inaccessible. So we're active users of LinkedIn. We have a company page, and you can find me personally if you look for Jordan Levy. Also, my email is jordan@capsource.io. Check out capsource.io if you want to schedule time directly with me or anyone on our team to learn about our software and services. We'd love to chat with you and hear more about, you know, what you're looking to do. If you're an industry partner looking to connect with students in schools, or schools looking to connect with industry through meaningful experiential learning engagements for your students.
Super. Hey, this is Sean Castrina with the 10 Minute Entrepreneur Podcast, where I bring to you actual founders of companies that share with you what they have learned and good advice that they're going to give you. To you. Again, thank you so much for listening to podcasts. It keeps growing at a crazy rate. Tell others about it. We will talk again soon.